to continue with the Ann Dodge series. One day, her other husband, Roger, came to visit, and Roger was a grandson of a Supreme Court judge of the United States, and had written some learned articles on jazz and Bach. Nobody read them, but he was a learned man. At any rate, for some reason I don't understand, we started to talk while Anne was washing her hair. This is important, because we both sat down to play a Bach violin piano sonata, me with my piano and he with a sopranino, which is a recorder the size of a cigar. Anyway, in the middle of the duet, she came out of the bathroom shrieking with laughter, screaming, "Do you know what you guys sound like?" And we both stared at her blankly and didn't know what she was talking about. It was, I know, in retrospect, probably the most horrible music she had ever heard. On the other hand, he came to my house in Forest Hills for several weeks thereafter, and we played duets until we both got tired of it. And it was a very informative period for me. I enjoyed it very much. Period. The next phase occurred when Julius Stern, who lived around the corner, invited me. He heard that I played the piano, invited me to play a Mozart violin piano duet. I cheerfully accepted. I didn't finish the first line of music when I remember the painful look on his face. And he said, "Jack, maybe you better give up the piano." I said, Why? What was the trouble? I was having a perfectly good time bumbling on the notes. I had been sight reading, of course. I've never seen a piece before. And we literally didn't play more than one line. And he suggested that maybe another instrument like the cello would make more sense. And at the end of the session, I realized that maybe he is right, and instead of the piano, take the cello, which I did. After a certain while, Dick introduced me to Marina, whose son went to the same college as Dick. And there, with a man, an optometrist by the name of Morgan Stern, we played trios. Now, Morgan Stern was a very bad fiddler, and his instrument was the viola, but he was dying to play the fiddle. And since I was dying to play the cello, and Marina had nobody with which to play a trio with, we formed the trio, and for several, well, it was more, maybe for a year or so, we played trios. Now, Morgie was once, during a break, once cornered with a question of a definition of a Mozart or Mozartian quality. And he sputtered and came up with the definition of Mozart, the equivalent of God, as far as he was concerned. That was that. And of course, the trios that we play, I now realize, were very bad. He was dying to work on the first violin part, which he couldn't do. And Marina was perfectly happy because the piano drowned out the violin and the cello. And I was just glad to go along with anybody who would let me play the cello with him. In the meantime, the nature and the enormity of music began to set in, and with a full force that resulted in my forming a trio with a man by the name of, what the hell was his name, Kovner, and I forget the violist's name, and we hired a coach, and we played trios. And every trio was extraordinarily difficult. No matter how I practiced my part, no question about it, I fell apart each time. The coach was very patient, and I didn't really suffer because I was too dumb to know how bad I was. This is literally. Then I put together Kovner with Marina at my house, and we played trios. We played one or two trios, and they were Beethoven trios. And since the book was open on her piano, the next one in line read the Archduke Trio. Now, I had heard the name Archduke Trio, and I didn't know at that time anything about it. So I simply said, why don't we try the Archduke? And he said immediately, no. Marina said, well, we can stop if we can't play it at the end of a couple of lines. Let's try it. And he said, no. Kovner. Anyway, I don't think I became insistent. After all, how can you become insistent? I'm sitting next to him, and I said, well, what could you lose? Maybe I became argumentative in a certain sense by trying to persuade him, but I certainly didn't raise my voice or hit him over the head or accuse him of anything. At the end of the second or third attempt to get him to take a chance, he exploded with such violence, with such loud, you goddamn so-and-so. It was incredible. I've never had anything like it happen. As a matter of fact, the children at that time heard the noise, the screaming, sat at the end, at the top of the stair, and as soon as Ida came home, said that the Kovner was going to hit Daddy. It was an incredible performance. Now, this man was studying the violin with a teacher, and they had reached the stage of the Bach partitas, which are extraordinarily difficult, and he switched to trios on a minor scale with me and the violist, indicating how much more satisfactory it was to play in an ensemble and not have to struggle with something that he just couldn't master. It still didn't do any good, but it was a lesson for me. I really knew that when this man with such pent-up anger at how bad we were, can come to my house and play trios, which he did afterwards, by the way, maybe for a year or so, so that I knew that playing solos was a terribly, terribly stupid thing to do for anybody but a professional violinist. The secret of the success of the amateur is in chamber music in concert. At one time, we went to a music camp in Pennsylvania somewhere, I forget where it is, and an interesting thing took place there. There was a Nazi-like character who kept asking people to play the Beethoven 59 number one, and he was very adamant and loud and insistent. It was offensive because he looked like a Nazi, and I think he was a Nazi. At any rate, I accepted. Now, my recollection is that my bone practically never touched a string, but this man was a magnificent first violin. He ripped off that 59 number one and electrified me. At that particular time, I had never heard it. I don't know what the numbers meant, and I stuttered, and when I asked my group that had come with me, I forget who was with me, maybe Morgenstern and Kubner, I said, let's play the 59 number one. They hooted and laughed. They knew how badly I played, and I said, but this was absolutely magnificent. We should. I sputtered, and I couldn't get anybody to play it. It was years of my trying that 59-1 before I was able to master it. It's a very difficult, but so inspiring. I always, always will remember that first session. And as I explain it, that was the secret that was missing for anybody who seeks to study music as an amateur. Namely, get inspired. Get the spirit of what it is that you're about to do, and then nothing is too difficult for you. No sacrifice, so to speak, made. And of course, I still insisted at that time that I didn't have time to practice, I didn't intend to become a professional cellist, and I was having a good time as it was, and period, and I continued making all kinds of noises, but without practicing, but playing regularly. At that time, I had a teacher, I forget for how long, maybe 3 or 4 or 5 lessons, who was conducting an orchestra at the Pratt Institute. After wiggling and waggling, I persuaded him to let me join the orchestra. He insisted in the beginning that I couldn't join, not because he didn't want me to come in, but because I couldn't play. And I said, well, I'll be very careful. I'll tell you what, don't play when the others stop playing, and maybe we'll get by. It seems that he needed transportation, and I had a car, so that when I said I would transport him, it sealed the deal. So I went to the Pratt Institute, and I distinctly remember enjoying enormously Beethoven's Symphony No. 8. I think we played 1 or 2 movements. And I remember how carefully I watched the cello, the lead cello, and stopped when he stopped. I'm positive I didn't play half the notes or a quarter of the notes that were required, but the enjoyment that I had was greater than the whole orchestra put together. I really flipped. That was the sort of thing that I find constantly is missing when I try to learn to any other art. But I still couldn't play. I still would anybody who took me on as a teacher immediately started to prescribe lessons, practicing, and I immediately made plans to dump them. I had 1 or 2 others
like it. They didn't catch on to what it was I want. I didn't know what I wanted myself. But my search continued.
The thing that I remember was that Dick, I don't know if he was 10 years of age at that time, asked his mother if I could stop playing the cello or else not let anybody else hear what I was playing. And I agreed with him, but I didn't stop. Then for a year or so, I really hit a jackpot. I had a client who actually was a bigamist, but who owed me money.